Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the new quarter for stocks, what your playbook should look like. We will ask the investment committee for their strategies in the month ahead. Joining me for the hour, Stephanie Ling, Jason Snipe, Jim Labenthal. Let's check the markets here. We are about 300-point decline now on the Dow as we begin this new quarter of trade. There's the S&P off about 0.5%. NASDAQ's in the red as well. So, you know, Steph, we came in. Let's just call it. We've basically been about record highs. You had the PCE largely in line, but rates are up today. The 10-year's at 4.32, and it's clear the stock market doesn't like that. So I'm wondering, if is this the quarter, or at least the beginning of, where we start worrying about higher for longer, where we actually come to grips with the fact that the Fed's not going to cut on a schedule that we once thought?
We probably are higher for longer. We might not even see any cuts this year. If you look at the prices paid number for the ISM this morning, it was pretty hot, and that's why rates have backed up. But the ISM itself was the best since October 22. This is the manufacturing series. So we have talked about the economy being strong, and we just saw a 3-4 print in GDP for the fourth quarter. We're running about 2.8% in Atlanta Fed currently for the first quarter. We've talked about the consumer, but now you all of a sudden have manufacturing doing well. And why do I pay attention to all these things? It's because obviously it translates into better earnings. Earnings came in at 10% in the fourth quarter. They're probably going to come in about 8 to 10% this year. A little concerned that 2025 is a little aggressive, up 15%, but we'll deal with that down the road. I think it's very legit to say we could see 8 to 10%, especially given that we are seeing better growth, but margins are doing better. They're stronger than expected. That was the big surprise in the first quarter. And a lot of that had to do with lower inflation, a little lower wages, a little bit more price improvement across the board. U.S. companies are excellent at doing this. And oh, by the way, now you have this little wrinkle that China might actually be doing a little bit better. I mean, that number over the weekend, their manufacturing ISM was actually the best in a year. So can you imagine if you actually see global growth starting to pick up along with momentum here remaining pretty good? So it is Goldilocks. I do worry about a lot of other things, Scott, but it's good for earnings, and that's what I care about the most.
All right. So, Jason, I feel like, you know, investors are more bullish than they've been in more or less 18 months.
Right.
And the data would suggest that they continue to put money into the market. B of A's flow show from an institutional standpoint, high allocation to stocks, the highest allocation into equities since November of 22. So we're bullish, we're invested, are we offside?
I don't think so. I mean, this market has really excited me in a lot of different ways. One is, I look at this time last year where we saw very, very narrow growth. Tech was obviously out to the lead. AI was the story. But if you look at this year, energy was the number one sector this quarter, followed by communication services, followed by financials, right? And tech was the number seven sector out of 11. Right. So I think this is, for me, a healthy market. I think this is a good follow through for the rest of the year. And I think this is exactly what we want to see, given the macro data that we've seen over the last couple of weeks.
What kind of risks do we have, Jimmy, as we enter a new quarter? Do we have substantial risk? I mean, Jonathan Krinsky at BTIG looks at the market and he wants to once again have the conversation about momentum and whether there's going to be a continued unwind and whether the biggest risk in his mind could be around the semis. Biggest downside risk. If you look at a lot of these gainers in the quarter, many were up a minimum of 25%, in some cases much more when you get to the highest flyers like NVIDIA and the record high ones like Micron. But nonetheless, the risks as we enter a new quarter are what?
I think it's what you just said, and I think it's the higher rates as well. By the way, you know, as we were opening up the show, the Atlanta Fed GDP came out for this quarter. It's now up at 2.8% on the back of the ISM survey that, Steffi, you were referencing. But as we talk about these risks, Scott, and dear viewers, you know, it's a question of what's the magnitude. I mean, remember, semis and tech in general have been up hard for over a year and a half now. And for them to give back a little bit, I mean, the S&P is off 0.5% right now, NASDAQ a little less than that. That doesn't strike me as too you know, teeth rattling, and I don't think we should be worried about it. I am underweight tech. Within tech, I'm overweight semis, if that's not too much of an oxymoron. But where I'm overweight more is the cyclicals, which for the last month, I mean, you've seen serious outperformance from energy, from materials, from industrials, from financials. And I think that continues on the back of, Steph, I think you said Goldilocks. You know, this is a Goldilocks environment. Okay, inflation's not coming down as much as we want to, but it's coming down. You got great labor market, you've got GDP growing, and you've got good indications from a lot of the sectors I just said that the earnings growth is going to be pretty nice in the coming quarter.
So nobody thinks that there's a point where the strong economy is a problem. I know it's perverse to say that, okay, strong economy, you know, but to what degree?
But define it. Like, I think the risk is, just to really go there, what would keep me up at night is maybe the Fed, this isn't going to happen, but maybe the Fed's, wait a second, things are too much hotter than we thought, we're going to have to raise rates. That's on not on anybody's radar screen. But if you want the risk that's like, oh, look out below, that's the risk.
But what if they just don't cut at all?
We're fine.
It's okay, because the economy is strong enough, we can handle the rates. We've been worried about the lag impact for higher interest rates, it just hasn't happened. And because we've had an enormous amount of stimulus that has been put into place into this economy. And it started during COVID in 2020, and we put 60% of U.S. GDP in terms of fiscal and monetary policies into this system.
There's not a number on that screen
huge.
Right next to where you're talking to 10-year. There's not a number that gets you to say, you know what, maybe that's the breaking point. We're at 4.33 on the 10-year. Some firms have put notes out in the last couple of weeks saying, you know what, you get to 4.35 and, you know, you get over a technical hump and maybe you creep even higher on the 10-year.
I mean, 5%, because that would probably start to impact housing.
Well, that's a long way
and
from here. What if he gets to 4.5?
No, I think 5% is the number that I would worry about. I think 4.5, we can handle it. But 5%, because that's where your 30-year fix is going to be 8% or close to it. And that's what I think would be problematic for the economy, because so much depends on housing. It's not just the housing sector itself. It's all around it, right? It's the multiplier effect. So that would bother me. But again, we have stronger growth in this economy because we have had an enormous amount of stimulus in the system. Mm-hmm. And we put in $2.5 trillion more stimulus last year that hasn't even gotten into the economy this year.
You all on the same page with that, that strong growth, the strong economy just trumps everything else? That's pretty much Steph's point, right?
Yeah, let me add two asterisks just to back up what Steph just said. 4.5% doesn't scare me. Remember, in October, we were at 5%. We were worried about the wheels coming off the bus, and guess what? They didn't. The second asterisk that I want to point out on this is that price matters. I know not everybody believes this, but when I look at a lot of these cyclicals, and again, look at industrials, look at discretionary like airlines or autos or anything, the prices of these stocks are still really quite depressed relative to 2.5 years worth of earnings outperformance. So that kind of goes hand in glove with the fact that, yeah, the economy is stronger, but these share prices, we're not talking about NVIDIA when we're talking about airlines or autos.
But what if some of these chip names that we're talking about, what if they give it up a little bit?
Okay.
What happens if there's an unwind, to use Krinsky's word, in one of the most high-flying sectors of the market at the same time you have significant questions about megacap, which, you know, the Magnificent Seven now is the Mag Four or 4.5 or 5?
Right. I think it's actually okay, right? Because, again, if we look at NVIDIA, I guess, of course, they're the darling of the ball, up 82% year-to-date, up 223% for the full year. I think it's okay. I think they're due for a pullback. I think they're exhausted. They've been running a lot. You know, they can't keep growing. NVIDIA, the Microns, all these names in this space can't keep growing at the pace that they've been growing. And I think, you know, right now there are other places to go, and that's why I think it's the market. The broadening concept is an exciting piece for the market.
So Citi today makes a number of sector calls, speaking of broadening or not. They downgrade tech, which plays into our conversation. They have a modest growth overweight, although they take sector to market weight overall. Within it, they go overweight software and a market weight on semis. They're talking about NVIDIA. However, on hardware like Apple, they lower to underweight. So they think you're going to get some divergence between these sectors within technology?
I mean, tech to be overweight last year was you're a hero if you were, period, right? I mean, it's 35% tech and comm services, it's 35% of the S&P 500. So to be overweight, wow. I mean, that to me, though, takes on a lot of risk. And so I've been underweight, wrong, of course, but I did have some very big positions that did very nicely, including Broadcom and Lam Research, IBM, et cetera. But I do think going to market weight is still aggressive, Scott. It's still 35%, you know, tech and comm service is still 35% of the overall market.
Don't you want to be at least market weight that area?
I think that that's a risky bet. That's a big concentration.
Really? Gosh, because it's been so risky to not.
Well, just last year, but 2 years ago. Remember what happened to tech 2 years ago?
Well, I mean, the Fed was raising rates 2 years ago,
okay.
So obviously
whatever the reason was, but
whatever
the reason was, if you were overweight tech 2 years ago, you got your head handed to you, right? So to me, I mean, I think I own plenty of tech. I'm about 20% in tech, so don't get me wrong. I definitely have exposure. But I think
the real
alpha generation is where everybody isn't. And that is exactly what Jimmy and what we've been talking about for a while, right?
Yep.
I mean, you and I have been talking about this for months on end.
Right.
But the point being is, you know, diversification is exciting. But where you're really going to add to returns is if you can find names that not everyone is involved in.
Exactly.
I think that that's a better way. That's the way I
Isn't
invest
that kind
in
of
way.
Harder
I think that's the way
now?
Jason and Jimmy do it, too.
There are a lot of spots, Jay, within the market that some would suggest are overbought. Mm-hmm. Non-tech. We've gone down the list of large cap stocks outside of technology that are at or near record highs, whether it's some industrial names, it's financial names.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who knows if they can continue to rise, but this has been a many more boats rising than just the big yacht of technology.
There's no doubt about that. And I think there are, to your point, Scott, I think there's parts of industrials that are overpriced. I mean, I look at a name that I like that I recently added in Caterpillar, which is obviously hitting all-time highs. And there's a number of them. And I think you have to be discriminating in parts of the economy, just like we're talking about tech, right? We're talking about hardware is being downgraded and software is a place for opportunity. So I think you have to be discriminating amongst even the other sectors. But I think broadly based speaking, the cyclicals are a place.
Well, what's happening in industrials is something that's a little bit unique. I think you both would agree with me in that we have these infrastructure packages put in place. We have onshoring and reshoring happening all over the world, but certainly, definitely here. And these companies, these industrials, like you speak of CAT, it's an international company.
100%.
I mean, who's going to benefit more if China starts to actually do a little bit better, right? Freeport McMoRan, same thing. So these stocks have done very well, but you have kind of these tailwinds that we haven't had in industrials and in cyclicals for a really long time.
So I'm looking at banks, right? They're going to kick off earnings. That's where it's all going to get interesting to start, Jimmy, earnings season. Financials performance, XLF record high, Citi 52-week high, JPM record high, Bank of America 52-week high, Wells is up a nice 17.5% in the quarter, American Express is up 21.5%. Does this continue? Is there still some room to run for these stocks?
This whole 12 minutes that we've been talking about, I've had Jeff Gundlach's tagline from a couple of years ago in my head. Are we whistling past the graveyard? It's an excellent tagline. I don't think we are, okay? However, if you want to talk about Citi or JP Morgan or the financials in general, of course there can be a pause at some point in time. I think the question that we all have to ask ourselves, if that pause happens, is it fundamental or just we kind of, from a sentiment point of view, run out of buyers? I think the latter is far more likely than the former. But we'll see in a week and a half, when Citigroup and JP Morgan kick off earnings. On both of them, what you're looking for is no surprises. You don't need these companies to shoot the lights out. You just need them to execute. You don't want to hear some big trading loss or some, you know, foreign currency devaluation that knocks earnings down. You just want execution. And I think you're likely to get it. I think also from all the macroeconomic indicators that we're seeing, I don't see a reason to worry about credit. I just don't, either on the corporate level or on the consumer level. Yes, Jamie Dimon will say something like, hey, you know, balance sheets are in great shape, but watch out. He says that every quarter.
Yeah, but I mean, we still need at some point capital markets to actually live up to the capital markets are coming back narrative for some of these banks.
Yeah, I think I feel comfortable saying green shoots are there. A little bit of life in the IPO market. Yes, Scott, we'd like to see some M&A.
But do you think
activity.
Just simple execution is good enough for a number of stocks that are at or new record at or near record highs?
They trade only at like 1.1 times book.
Yeah, I know, but they've traded at or near 1 times book for as long as we've been talking about about book.
Well, that's not exactly true. I mean, they've traded higher than that. But right now, I think the expectations really are so. People are so skeptical about financials because you haven't made a ton of money in the group, in the sector, especially in the last year. But I do think that the valuations are supportive. I do think capital markets are coming back. Bank of America actually already pre-announced in the beginning of March. They talked about things that were basically in line with expectations. So on the margin, you're going to have companies that can do a little bit better on execution, have companies that do a little bit better on capital markets, taking market share, maybe a little bit better on the cost structure side. But I don't think that this next quarter is going to be the blowaway breakout quarter for financials.
Goldman takes Citi to their conviction buy list. Three levers to drive outside growth over the next 3 years, accelerating top line, cutting costs, and freeing up capital through strategic divestments.
Yeah, this is Citi's quarter to win. I mean, they just need to not mess up. And I'm not trying to be trite when I say that, but you just don't need like some Argentine peso devaluation that nobody's paying attention to. Obviously, that's already in the news. I think with Ms. Frazier at the helm there, that it's clear that they are on an execution roll here. They're going to continue to cut expenses. As far as top line goes, yeah, I'd like to see some more. But let's also, to Steffi's point out that stock trades at 70% of tangible book value. What I want to see most of all is buybacks, because that's really accretive on the balance sheet and they really shrink share counts. So buybacks and no mess ups.
What about the banks for you, Steph?
Oh, I thought you were going to Jason. Well, Bank of America.
Because you got Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, you have Amex and Schwab.
Yeah, and I've been adding to Schwab because it's actually lagged and I do like that story very much. Love the fact that the CEO is buying back stock. Bank of America, I already talked about, is one of my largest positions, so is Morgan Stanley. I both think they are unique in terms of Bank of America. They've always done really good on expense management. I do think they are taking share, and they do have that wealth management exposure piece that I like that complements the capital markets piece. Again, trading at 1.1 times book, good balance sheet, well capitalized. Morgan Stanley, it's really going to depend on the new CEO and can he execute and be consistent, because the expectations are kind of high because they did outperform in the last couple of years. But I still think, again, that's more of a capital markets play, but they too also have a wealth management business, and they've been doing really well on the margin side of things too. And I think NNA in general for the industry is improving.
What about J Energy, which was the best performer in March? You mentioned it kind of in passing of the other areas beyond tech that have done well. The XLE is up 8% over the last month. So it was, you know, yes, it's one of the best performers of the quarter,
right,
but really set itself apart over the last 30 days. Does that continue?
You know what, I think it does, and there's a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that, again, we've talked about this a lot on the show, the supply-demand dynamic is just a reality, right? There's exorbitant amount of demand, and supply is not really what it is. And we know, you know, that cuts are going to remain in place until at least June, right? So that I think, you know, going into our, you know, obviously here in the States, our driving season and where a lot of the spending happens. So I think they have a nice floor for continued growth. I mean, we own the XLE. We got out of Chevron, and I think that was an execution story for us. It just didn't make sense anymore. But I think broadly space, and again, crude is up 15% in the quarter, and I think that continues to play through with the stocks.
Jimmy, energy, for somebody who's got Cheniere, Transocean, and Exxon, big positions too.
Yeah, big positions, and I think the next leg comes from natural gas. Now, this is controversial. I cannot prove this, folks. Natural gas has been absolutely clobbered, down roughly 50% over 5-6 months. You know, bottomed at 153, now it's at 183. I think you're starting to get some, I'm going to use the term again, green shoots out of China, that maybe President Xi is going to do some real stimulus there. I think that's why natural gas is up about 4.3%. But if you get some real life from natural gas, that's the next leg higher in all of these equities.
What about healthcare? Up 8.5% in Q1. Citi today, Steph, downgrades it to underweight. That's part of the sector call that I mentioned earlier, is they downgraded tech as a sector, and then within that, certain calls breaking down the segments. What do we think?
You know, other than some biotech and Eli Lilly, the group acts terribly. I mean, it really does. So I'm not sure you want to downgrade it here because it's lagged so much, especially since earnings actually for the sector grew 8%. Better than tech, by the way. So I do think you can find your spots within healthcare. I am underweight. I do like GE Healthcare a lot. It's a special situation story, as it's a spin out from GE, the parent we know. And actually, I think they're doing a better job in execution and in margins and market share. I own J&J just because it's so darn cheap, but that stock can't get out of its way. And then most recently, you know, I sold Bristol Myers because I made, you know, 6% and calling it a day because it just doesn't act as well right now.
You offsides in healthcare, Jimmy? You're overweight,
so.
The space.
Yeah, I mean, Steph, you caught me by surprise on that. I am overweight. I think this is the snapback trade after 2023. But I think where you and I are having a little difference is something key that you said. You got to pick your spots. Bristol-Myers has just been a disaster. I'm glad you made money, but it's been a disaster for a long time. You and I have spoken about that. If you look at things like AbbVie and Vertex, I mean, they're having some gangbuster years. And then the stock that you and I love, Jason, CVS, I mean,
It's showing
some signs of life here. I think this is where you're supposed to rotate into, but get out of.
But it's interesting to me that you're as bullish as, you know, most of the, you know, bulls,
yep.
And yet you're overweight what would be considered a defensive area of the market.
I think
so explain that to me.
If I were in your seat, what I would say is, Jimmy, you're going into an election season. Healthcare stocks normally underperform terribly during an election season.
Oh, that's yet another reason why I'm curious as to why you're overweight. Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be my Achilles heel in this trade. As I said, this is a little bit of a snapback after a terrible 2023. Valuations, dividends are very forgiving. The demographic support. But on this election season thing, I mean, we have to point out that the Inflation Reduction Act from 2 years ago actually let the horse out of the barn as far as drug price negotiations go. And with all of the drama that's coming out of Washington, D.C., you're really not hearing a lot on drug pricing, folks. You're really not hearing a lot on that.
I mean, the campaigns haven't really even started.
It's a fair point.
You know,
it's a fair point.
A little early.
I find it very interesting that these executives in healthcare, they're making acquisitions. They're doing all kinds of M&A. $400 billion in the last year alone. When a sector underperforms and you see companies doing M&A, that's kind of interesting to me because they obviously see value. They have a longer time period than some of us on the desk in terms of being portfolio managers. But I do think it's sort of an interesting data point and something worth just to keep in the back of your mind when you're looking at the sector.
All right, let's go last debate of sort of sectors or areas of the market that you want to be in before we take our first break. That is small caps versus large caps. We've done some sectors. Now let's do a bigger area of, I think, controversy, right? Because you've had some come out and say, hey, this is the time for small caps, right? Tom Lee is expecting, you know, 50% for small caps this year. Barclays weighs in today. We think the small cap upturn is tied to rate cut expectations instead of fundamentals and continue to prefer large caps. Jimmy.
If I'm long small caps, I believe that's a place to be. Let's be clear, this is not a defensive sector. And if I'm in this because of rate cuts, that's the wrong reason to be in there. I mean, it may help as long as the economy is doing well. And that's the main point. The economy has to continue to do well for small caps to work. If that happens, these are undervalued. It's just simple.
You need rate cuts, though, don't you?
I don't think you need
that. Hasn't the market sort of proven that?
It would be nice. Look, if you're Tom Lee and you're going to have 50% from small caps this year, and I'm not making fun of him, he may well be right. You'd need 2 to 3 rate cuts. But if you get a strong economy, consumption hangs in there, margins, which Steph was talking about earlier, continue to improve, this could be a nice 20% year. I do think, by the way, you'll get two or three rate cuts this year.
But you don't think it's too soon. Does anybody think it's too soon, Jason?
So I think
for the Russell,
I think it is important to have some rate cuts, you know, to support small cap growth going forward. I think to Jimmy's point, I think the cyclicals and obviously the economy remain strong. Small caps can work. But I do think that extra leg, the catalyst, because we've seen a little bit of the performance at end of last year and then it kind of sputtered out right coming into this year. So I think cuts are going to be important there.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Calls of the day. Trade some individual names next. We have bullish analyst notes on Delta and Target and Disney. We'll find out how the desk is playing all those right after this quick break.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Calls of the daytime. We start with Delta reiterated a top pick at Morgan Stanley. 75% upside is where they see that stock going. $85. Jimmy, the bull case valuation goes up $110. So they reiterate overweight. They're talking about their push into premium will not just allow them to outperform the rising tide of airlines demand growth, but also will be rewarded by investors.
I'm very bullish on Delta. Trades at around 6.5 times this year's earnings. I think there's a lot of upside to earnings if you just listen to what Ed Bastian says about demand. This is a fun note to read. I mean, the bull case is getting a lot of things going right, including a 12 times multiple that, yes, you folks, you could see a 12 times multiple in some sort of blow off top. That's not what a rational airline investor is going to look for as their base case, nor is Morgan Stanley saying it's their base case. It's their bull case. The interesting story that they have here is that maybe this is a premium brand, they're saying, like an Abercrombie and Fitch. And certainly there's upselling a lot of seats. I think at the end of the day, though, let's keep this simple. This is another execution story. For 2.5 years, the company has been outperforming on earnings. They just need to continue to execute. I don't think we need to get caught up in the froth of a 12 times multiple or Abercrombie and Fitch comparisons.
All right. So Target's been on the mend, right? From a stock standpoint, the price target today, Steph, goes to 205. From 195 to 205, that's at Jefferies. That's a 52-week high. They met with IR executives, did Jefferies last week, and they came away bullish.
Really encouraging note, talking about discretionary spending actually picking up, food and beverage being now a $20 billion business and up $8 billion since 2019. So they got a good mix. And then the really exciting piece of the story is the private label. That always has been the case. It's about 33% of their total revenues. They have 11 brands that are over $1 billion each. So they're positioned pretty well. Profitability is good. They just got to get the top line back. And I thought the discretionary comments were in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, the stock couldn't get out of its own way for a while, right? It was painful.
Yes,
very. But now it's up 26.5% year to date.
But it trades at 18 times, so I think I'm pretty comfortable. And I do think they could see if something like 10 to 1050 in earnings power over the next coming year. So that makes the stock pretty attractive.
Let's talk Disney. You obviously have the proxy fight and the shareholder vote coming down to the wire. That's on Wednesday. So the price target gets raised, Jimmy, to 145 from 130 B of A. They reiterate a buy. I'm wondering how you're gaming this all out.
Well, let's start with...
As a shareholder.
Yeah. You know, this has been a turnaround story for now many years. What if it now becomes, I'm sorry to use this for the third time, an execution story? And what I mean by that, trading 24 times next 12 months earnings. That's not cheap, but it's not too expensive if you get the growth rate that supports the PEG ratio of 1.2. Now, for this to happen, three things. Theme parks, I kind of take it for granted. We can't have any hiccups in theme parks. Number two, profitability and streaming has to continue to come in before September 30th. And then we talk about how profitable. And third, finally, the sort of strategic moves. What are we doing with ESPN? Let's get the Hulu transaction done. That would be a nice little shot in the arm for this stock moving higher. Those three things.
Do you have a take? I know you've said that you're in favor of Peltz.
I am.
Right? So what happens if he wins? What happens if he doesn't?
Yeah.
As a shareholder, give me both sides.
Well, the support is kind of like it can't hurt. I mean, he's got a lot of experience in consumer. I don't think he'll distract Bob Iger and the team from what they're doing. If he doesn't get the seat, I think both he and I will be happy with the fact that the stock's up 50% in 6 months with a, you know, seemingly good runway for more gains.
You keep the you keep holding the stock regardless of the outcome?
I do. I mean, again, I think Peltz doesn't hurt and on the margins can add. I think Bob Iger and team have been doing a good job. And for the three reasons that I listed before, I think the stock can continue to perform. It's not, I think the Peltz sideshow behind us, and it will be a sideshow when it's done, that'll be good.
Why is Hulu taking so darn long?
You know, it should be a process right now of the investment bankers getting together and having a, you got two independent investment banks that make a valuation. I think they meet in the middle. It's a process. I don't know, you know, why it's taking so long, Steph, but I don't think there's any hair there.
You know, and you supported Peltz too.
Yeah.
Before you sold the shares.
And I would sell the stock if he doesn't get a worse.
You would?
Yeah, I would. I think he could make a lot of change. He has a proven track record. He's excellent. You want him on your team. I just don't think it makes sense not to. So I would sell it if he doesn't get involved, more involved.
Wow, okay. Well, you don't own it now, so
I don't.
I guess it doesn't matter.
I sold it a lot higher.
Yeah. Pippa Stevens has the headlines for us. Hey, Pippa.
Hey, Scott. Convicted killer Alec Murdoch was sentenced to 40 years in federal prison today for stealing from his clients and law firm. He was also convicted of related crimes in state court. The judge also ordered Murdoch to pay more than $8 million in restitution to his victims. He's already serving life without parole for the murder of his wife and son. Google plans to destroy data on the web browsing histories of millions of users to settle its lawsuit related to the incognito privacy settings. The 2020 class action lawsuit accused Google of misleading users of how it tracked people when they were in that mode. In addition to destroying the data, Google will also update its disclosures about the information it collects. And Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree for spring military conscription, which will call up 150,000 citizens for mandatory military service. That's according to a document on the Kremlin's website. And it comes after Putin called up 130,000 in September and raised the maximum age for military service to 30. Scott, back to you.
All right, Pippa, appreciate that. Thank you, Pippa Stevens. Still ahead, betting on bonds in Q2, where you can find the biggest opportunities right now. Bob Pisani is going to break that down in today's ETF Edge. He'll do that next.
We could try to explain what it feels like to get your work done on a John Deere. The way a Z-Track mower finishes in half the time you thought it would. Or how much easier it is to move mountains of soil with a 1 Series tractor. We could even go into detail about how it feels to tow up to 4,000 pounds behind a Gator XUV. But if you really want to know what it's like to run with us, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
We're back on the half. Let's get to Bob Pisani now with today's ETF Edge. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Scotty. Investors are in love with their 4 to 5% return on bonds, but is that going to keep continuing into 2024? Let's talk with Joanna Gallegos. She's the co-founder of BondBlocks. They're 100% focused on fixed income ETFs. That's what they do. Joanna, the big question everybody wants answered, are these 4 to 5% treasury yields that everybody's fallen in love with going to continue into 2024?
Yeah, so we believe in 2024, the income and fixed income is going to persist, and investors can enjoy using U.S. Treasury ETFs for their cash management. And also, we think 2024 is very different because it's a year where you should be putting on some more risk given where we think the Fed's going to end up at the end of the year.
Now, so last year we had you on, short-term treasuries were all the rage. This year you say go out into the intermediate term, the 3 to 7 year for treasuries. Why are we now in the intermediate part of the curve?
Yeah, we are in the intermediate part of the curve because we feel that we're at peak rates. We think that the Fed is going to bring rates down towards the end of next year. So what that means is there's going to be a tailwind of total return coming to bonds. So when interest rates go down, their prices go up. And this is how you can manage duration really precisely. So if you step out of 1 and 2 year duration and in maturities, you're going to get more risk in your portfolio in the treasury space. So we like intermediate treasuries for that reason.
And in corporate bonds, amazing. Most of them, LQD, big ETF, still yielding north of 4%, broad corporate bond, but you like the riskier end. That's triple B rated. That's the lowest investment grade out there. You like that. And you also like, of course, what's going on in high yield. Now, what do you like here?
Our top picks in credit this year are triple B intermediate and triple C in high yield. And here's why we like triple B so much. It's because it is the best kept secret in investment grade. Like you just mentioned, a 4.5 yield in LQD. The space in triple B is yielding north of that. And it yields north of that because it is the lowest rung of credit rating in investment grade. but it has almost zero incremental default risk. So it's the place that you should be in. We think it's sort of the place to be is in triple B.
So you get more yield for very little default risk.
Little to none, because the whole category investment grade is something of like 0.2%. It's pretty low. And if you can pick up more yield and more return there, especially if you take that intermediate space and you get a little more duration this year, that's why we like it so much.
All right, we're going to have a lot more coming up on where you should be in bond ETFs this year coming up. ETF Edge, 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time. Joanna is going to be joined by Tony Rockdies. He's the global head of ETFs at Morgan Stanley. They're very involved in this space. They just recently launched two active fixed income mutual funds. That's ETFEdge.cnbc.com. Scotty, back to you.
All right, Bob. Thanks. See you soon. Up next, two big breakups. Industrial giants GE and 3M completing spinoffs this week. Stephanie owns them both. We'll trade them both next. We're back to big industrial giants completing spinoffs this week. GE is first. The company will complete its breakup tomorrow. We know you own it. So GE Aerospace is going to retain the ticker GE. Larry Culp's going to ring the opening bell. It's going to be a big milestone in this company's history and maybe in this stock's progression from when you first bought it.
It's been 5 years in the making, so it's been a very long
time. Painful, rocky, but
absolutely
more recently rewarding.
Humbling, and then, yes, now rewarding. Certainly, it's had a great year. It's up 85% in the past year, and I think the story really just gets going for them. They'll have less distractions. They can focus on their number one market share positioning and the profitability. That's the most important thing, along with free cash flow. They're going to generate $5 billion in free cash flow this year. I think by 2026, you're going to see $7 a share in free cash flow. I think the story is still very attractive, and I think it just gets going, as I mentioned. So I'm going to hold on to it.
How big of a holding is this for
it's
you now?
It's my number three position. Yeah. And I'm not touching it.
No. Okay. All right. Not adding to it.
Not yet. No, I mean, if we got a couple bad days, but I'm up a lot. And, yeah. You know, so I still like it, though, very, very much.
All right. What about 3M, which we said is also having a spin this week?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't take 5 years for this one to see improvement. But I do think there is potential. We talk about spins and why they work. And because there's less focus on there's more focus on the primary company, the main company, and then SpinCo also gets their own special attention, which is a separate management team. So I think there's more that they can do just than healthcare. That's what they're spinning off this week. But this company has a lot to deal with, right? And so they've got industrial, they've got transportation, electrification, electronics, consumer, etc. So I think there's some pieces that they can spin off or close or consolidate. And I think this new CEO, Bill Brown, has a fabulous reputation, almost Larry Culp-like. So I think I'm excited to see what he can do for this company over the long term.
You're looking for a Culpian-like move in this stock.
And the interesting thing is there's only one buy on the sell side and 17 holds and sells. So it won't take much.
Because the stock hasn't done anything.
That's right.
I mean,
and I just recently bought it. So, you know, so we'll see if it can get some legs.
All right. We are going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to look at the committee's biggest winners and losers in Q1. And Mike Santoli is going to join us with his midday word next. Senior markets commentator Mike Santoli joins us now with his midday words. Good to see you. So new quarter, rates are up. You think today's sell-off is in any way some trepidation about interest rates? What's on your mind?
There's definitely a little bit of the attention to the move in yields. We did have an indicator for a higher open before we got the strong ISM numbers and yields started to move. I think that's happening, though, in the context of a little bit of a reversal of the end of quarter action. So maybe overindulged in some respects at the end of last week. Remember, it was a very much a broadening move. A lot of the laggard stocks and a lot of the more speculative stuff were being scooped up. I just looked. The 20 worst performing S&P 500 stocks year to date, all but one of them are down today, and almost all of them were up last week. So you had this reversal of a reversal. So you want to wait for that to clear out. But, yeah, I think in general, there is this relatively sort of delicate equilibrium we're in where, you know, the economic numbers are good enough. Inflation's got to be where it is. And then we, you know, we see where the Fed and yields go. So I do think that, you know, we're getting tested on that front, but it's not much more to make of it than simply you're up 10%. You haven't had a 2% pullback. Long term, those have that has positive implications. Short term, maybe you have to, you know, digest that a bit.
It doesn't take much, in other words, when you have an overbought market to the degree that we do,
right,
to make you say, okay, maybe now's that moment to pull a little bit back.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all been paying attention to the high momentum areas of the market, which have definitely had a slight gut check. So I do think that's what we're watching at the moment. But again, you know, you have to see this market develop one of these little wobbles into something of a more proper pullback. We haven't done that since October.
Yeah, I mean, even the Nasdaq showing some life as we have this conversation. Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Alphabet are all in the green. Mike, I'll see you on Closing Bell.
All right,
thank you, Mike Santoli. Dom Chu, by the way, now has a market flash for us. Dom, what do you have?
All right, so Scott, Judge, we have shares right now, Trump Media and Telecom, which are trading down to the lows of the session right now, down about 23%. $48.20 was the last trade there. This is, of course, the parent company of Truth Social, the social media platform owned by former President Donald Trump. This comes on the heels of them reporting in their latest regulatory filings, their first report as a newly merged public social company, a loss of $58 million for fiscal 2023 on revenues of around $4.1 million. The company also says in the filing that it says, quote, TMTG, Trump Media Telecom Group, expects to incur operating losses for the foreseeable future. The market cap right now is still around $6.5 billion, but just the volatility continues here, Scott. Remember, just four trading days ago, this was a $79 and change stock. So we'll keep an eye on this. I'll send things back over.
I appreciate that update. Dom Chu, thank you very much. Up next, we're going to take a look at some of the committee's top stock leaders and laggards in the quarter. We'll trade those as well when we come back. I want to look back at some of the winners and losers in the portfolios of our investment committee. Steph, I'm going to begin with you. Ones that we haven't talked about yet. So one of your biggest winners was Quanta, up 20%. One of your biggest laggards, Zoetis, down 14%. Can you talk about both?
Yeah, I mean, Eaton and Quanta are about the same themes, right? It's all that infrastructure and IRA, the spending bill, and how backlog and orders are actually going to improve.
Eaton was a big winner, so Eaton also, was, by
yeah,
the way. But
yeah.
Quanta, 20% in the quarter.
Yeah, no, I mean, because Quanta had a really great quarter. It lagged into the print. But I do think that the grid upgrade is certainly real, and you're in the second inning maybe at best. And in terms of Eaton, I mean, their orders went from 2% to 7% sequentially last quarter. That's what got me to buy the stock, because the momentum is there for both of these companies. They are not cheap, so you buy them on weakness. In terms of Zoetis, I actually think that the Zoetis underperformance is because Elanco has done so well. Elanco is actually up quite nicely, up double digits in the past year, and that's because they have a new product cycle story. And I think there's this perception that now Zoetis has competition. Well, this is a huge industry. It's a $60 billion total addressable market, growing to $130 billion by 2030. So to me, both can survive. Maybe Zoetis is a little expensive, and it was got a little ahead of itself, but I like both very much for the long term.
All right, Jason Stipe. So we know about NVIDIA being a big winner, and we know about Apple being a big loser. But let's go elsewhere. You mentioned Caterpillar, and that stock's been one of those large cap industrial names near new highs or at highs. So we don't need to do that either. Netflix up 25%.
100%.
Not enough people talking about that move.
Yeah, no. I mean, Netflix has been a tremendous winner this quarter. I think for me, ad-supported tier is obviously working. Password share is obviously working. Their foray into live sports is a new catalyst, I think, which is exciting to investors. So up 25%, it's moved a lot over the last year. You know, so for us, it's not a name that we're adding to, but we've obviously enjoyed the run.
What about Arista, which is up 23%? In the first quarter.
Yeah. So Arista has been interesting too. I mean,
cloud networking. When I look at AI and AI spend and cloud spend, you know, it was projected to soften in 2023 and obviously exploded due to what generative AI and all that's been going on there. So that's exactly where they play. The stock's up 23%. I mean, EPS was up 48% last quarter, revenue up 21. So I like this name. I think it could still continue to play well.
All right. What about Palo Alto? So yeah. Palo Alto has been an incredible stock, as many of these mm-hmm. cyber names have been. Mm-hmm. But this one's down, surprisingly, in the quarter, down 4%.
Yeah. So what's interesting about Palo Alto, I mean, again, it was a strong quarter. I mean, EPS was up 39%, revenue was up 19%. You know, the concern for me, and I think the concern for the market, was their guidance going forward. They have a new go-to market strategy. And sometimes as a stock picker, you look at that and say, wait, what was not working? Why are you changing the strategy? That's why the stock has traded back. And it's only, you know, down 4%.
It was zero last year.
100%. 100%. Oh, well, cybersecurity.
All these stocks were.
Except Fortinet, the one I own.
That's another area where people are watching now, you know, as you progress into a new quarter, whether these stocks are going to as in Palo Alto's case, sort of snap back.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they're going to be trouble ahead for some of these, speaking of high flyers.
Right.
They're not cheap. That's the problem. But cybersecurity is huge and market and certainly a place where you want to have exposure. I think it actually could be just as big as AI, to be honest with you. When you have cybersecurity companies getting cyber attacks, that's a problem. And what you are seeing is you're seeing vendor consolidation. There's too many out there, companies that don't talk to each other, so nothing's really working. And so I think the bigger are only going to get bigger. And I think that Palo Alto is one of them. I think Fortinet is one as well.
All right, quick break, and then final trades are on the other side. All right, welcome back. A couple notes to tell you about. Wednesday, that's April 3rd. David Einhorn is going to be with us exclusively. We're going to be live from the Sohn Conference in New York City, an event that certainly near and dear to all of us at CNBC, raises a lot of money for childhood cancer. David Einhorn's been a longtime supporter of that cause, of this event, and he's going to sit down with us and have an interview about that. We can't wait for that. Closing bell, Adam Parker, Shannon Sakosha, Cheryl Young's a private wealth manager, so I'll see all of you then. Give me a name for a final.
Wynn Resorts, held down too long.
Okay, Jason Stipe.
Hilton Worldwide, stay long.
Stephanie Link.
SLB.
All right, let's see what this market does. S&P is negative, as is the Dow. I'll see you on the bell to take you through the final hour of the exchanges now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.